You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 1.
All right, the O-Dog is out this afternoon. Issues on the home front. Literally his house.
Yes.
There are issues
yeah.
with the house.
Not on the home front. His house. Like
literally his house.
Issues with, his dwelling.
Is that what they call it? Is that the official term, the dwelling?
I had a buddy on the phone this afternoon that said to me, I don't know how it got into the conversation, but he said, if you could have a private eye follow somebody for 48 hours, who would you like followed? And I was like, Jeff O'Neill. I said, I don't know why, because he didn't do anything, but I just feel like, this guy's quite busy. You know, he's at lunch here, he's at, here, he's at the studio, he's at up in Collingwood. Like, he travels. Like, he's a busy guy.
He is a busy guy. Jonah Siegel in here from The Athletic.
Yeah.
That might be a good article for you.
There is actually, you never watched The American Office, but there's one episode where Pam, the secretary, is instructed to write down everything that Michael does throughout the day. And I feel like that would be really fun to do with Jeff, where I just trail him around and write down everything he does.
Do you think
he would go for it?
No.
Here's what I think would happen. His initial reaction would be absolutely not.
Yeah.
And then I think it would dawn on him that because he doesn't have a subscription, he'd never have to worry about it because he'd never read it. So I think eventually
read the first, like, remember,
the first, read the first paragraph.
Yeah. You get the first paragraph before you actually have to,
So as long as you butter him up with the first paragraph, you could bury him. The second it blurs out and it says that you have to log in or come up with a subscription, you could just absolutely bury him and he would never know it.
Well,
that's the play. And I think eventually he'd come around and he'd allow you to do it.
But and I think Jeff eventually for a day
he'd forget that you were there, and then we'd have some real material.
It's what do you think? Those bachelor show? What those? Yeah, shows that
like that have the Big Brother.
Big Brother where the cameras 24 hours.
So I would be Big Brother.
3 days into Big Brother, there is nothing better than watching a show like Big Brother.
Right.
Where the first couple of days everyone's proper. And then by day three, some guy's picking every orifice in his body.
He's
around with no clothes on. And he's like, you forget. Like, you adjust to the fact that the cameras are on. And I think the O-Dog would get to about 2:30 in the afternoon and totally forget that Jonas was tracking everything.
Just writing notes.
Yeah.
And then it is go time on The Athletic.
I don't know how we got to it, but we were laughing because he said, what athlete, what person would you love to track for, 48 hours? I know people, Donald Trump would be just fascinating.
But we kind of know what Trump's doing.
We do. You get the live report because Twitter and all of that. But, what figure? Sports figure?
I'll tell you what I would like to know. Yeah. I would like to know what Joe Burrow was doing after that football game last night.
Yeah.
He, I believe, is 23 years old, so he's legal. He's done with school. He just put forth one of the all-time great seasons in history. He goes to school at LSU. The game is in New Orleans. So he goes. It's an LSU town to begin with. Heisman National Championship. He's going first overall. He knows Nike is going to be drooling over him. Adidas is going to be drooling over him. Under Armour, Gatorade, everybody. And imagine hitting the French Quarter last night. I want to know what that dude did. I want to know what he did. He came across.
Yeah.
How he woke up this morning. I want to know everything about the life of Joe Burrow over the last, 14 hours.
Right.
What did that cat
do? You think he has to be careful, though?
No.
Because he's going to be the number one pick?
Well,
you don't think guys have to be more... I think they have to be more careful. You can't do...
I'm glad you brought that up, because I'm sure you guys saw the video of him smoking a cigar after the game.
Yes.
So, which is iconic immediately.
Right.
There he is. Look at him. He's I'm out of here.
That's Joe Montana.
That's Montana. And that's... Now, he's got to follow it up now, because he's put himself on the map with the way he played, but the cigar shot is everything. If he goes to the Hall of Fame in 20 years... That is the beginning of the montage.
Right.
It all started in the NFL, basically, when he decided to walk away from college. But I can already see it being written. I can read it in my mind.
The negative spin on that?
Someone's going to write an article. Should he have been smoking a cigar? Is this who you want representing your organization? I can already picture it. Was he careful enough? Where was his PR team? Should they have allowed cameras to be around when he's smoking his cigar, he's 23 years old. Who cares?
Jonas, give us your view on it. because
I'm cool with it, but I'm like more old school that way. But I can see like someone from my establishment writing that.
Oh, it's coming.
Especially
the Athletic
like
will write it.
Well, if he has a bad stretch of games and he's not playing well, and like I'm trying to think, like Tim Tebow,
Vince Young, Matt Leiner. There's been a lot of like great college quarterbacks.
Baker Mayfield. Like imagine that was Baker Johnny Mayfield Manziel. And has like the first couple years of his career.
That's right.
It'll be a meme, don't you think?
That's what Mayfield would do after a big game. Johnny Manziel would have done.
Right.
And Burrow has no connection to them. He's a remarkable player. He's going first overall. By all accounts, he's a great leader. He's got presence and all that. But he smoked a cigar after the game. So how can I turn that into a contrarian view where I don't like him as a player?
Here's the thing.
And as a human being.
If he was that worried about it, he would have made sure that that image didn't get out.
You don't think he would just be like, man, you know what? I just won a national title.
But that's my point. He's confident enough to go, I'm going to have a cigar here. And to me, it's a cigar moment.
Sure.
But that's it. Like, he was confident enough to know that he knows there's an internet out there. He knows that that's going to go viral.
Oh, yeah.
But that's my point. If he didn't want it out there, it wouldn't be out there. Because he would have had a cigar in the shower. Or, back where there's no access to cameras or anything.
Well, he was posting stuff on Instagram last night at the bar, somebody was. Like, listen, he's
in
New Orleans.
He's allowed to do that. Like, I don't have a problem with it, but you're right. I can see there's always, that will be banked. Not for when he's killing the league, it's when things are going rough. They're going to, you start to put together a timeline of like, what's been wrong? We just had a spirited, actually a good debate outside about, Freddie and the All-Star game and Austin and who's been their MVP. And it's not how great they played. It's the stretch has really hurt this player or this stretch. Like, you look at it not for when things are going well. It's when things aren't going well.
Yeah.
You point to, remember this, remember that. That'll be one of the remember things, unfortunately, on the negative.
Oh, I can already picture, because there's too much time between now and the draft, too much time between now and next September when he may or may not start for the Bengals.
Right.
Like, he's going first overall to Cincinnati. The Bengals are taking him. I don't know if he'll start week one. They may ease him into it, and maybe who knows what they do at that position.
Right.
But there's too much time. You have to fill too much content, and it's on a platter. He thinks he's too cool.
Okay. Well,
he doesn't, and I can picture it, and it's going to drive me insane, but I already know it's going to happen. Someone is going to have that take because it's waiting there for you. You could turn it into a great radio bit.
Laramie Tunsil.
But Tunsil was different because, A, it was weed. He had a mask on.
But he dropped in the draft. Like, he's not dropping in the draft.
No, of course not.
But that one was strategically, he got jammed up. That was a gutless play.
Yeah.
But sounds like by his, ex-father-in-law or something, I don't even remember. But that was gutless. Like, can you imagine 10 minutes before, I think he was supposed to be a top 5 pick.
He was. He was the top-rated offensive lineman in the draft. There was, I don't remember which draft it was. I don't think he was in contention to go first.
No,
top five for sure.
Off the top of my head, I think he was ranked 3 to 5.
He was. And he went like 11th or something.
Yeah, he dropped to Miami. I thought he was farther down. It was like 15th.
It might have been.
He dropped far, and he got jammed up twice. Remember? Because he got the gas mask, and then there was another.
I'm getting paid on the side.
Of, hey, my mom or grandma needs money for this. Like, there was the text,
right,
too.
And that jammed up Ole Miss kind of more than Tunsil, because that's the thing about these. It's a weird transition, because once they're done playing,
right,
they're like, we're out. I'm out of college.
Yeah.
Like, last night, Odell Beckham Jr. was there. He went to LSU. And did you see the videos going around of him handing stacks of cash to players? Now, LSU got out of getting in front of this immediately, and they issued a statement saying, fake news, it was just a bit, and he took all the cash back. But the NCAA and LSU are like, are you guys serious? Like, you can't hand kids cash because of how ridiculous the rules might be, but they're the rules.
Yeah, they are the rules.
Like, you can hate on the NCAA's rules, and I don't personally agree with them, but those are the rules. You can't just be like, here's cash for winning the game. And that's effectively what it looked like Odell Beckham Jr. was doing last night. But if you're a senior or even a junior that's going to declare, you're like, I'll take the cash. I'm out of here. What do I care? What are you going to do to me, NCAA? But until you get to the point where you're like, I'm leaving, you have to play by the rules and be a choir boy. There it is up on TSN4, just handing around. There's cash for you. Good game. Here's cash for you. Like, it's just handing out cash.
I love it.
And I believe that the videos of the two players that he was doing that with, they're both juniors that likely will declare for the draft, but they
might not
return. And if they return, that's going to turn into an investigation. Did Odell Beckham Jr. pay you? Anyway, Mark Schlereth will join us in about 10-15 minutes. We'll start looking ahead to the championship weekend in the NFC-AFC, look back on the game last night. It's a Maple Leaf game night tonight with New Jersey in town. And Sheldon Keefe, I think he issued the appropriate message earlier today, was asked about major injuries that they're facing. And the Morgan Riley injury is a huge injury.
Yeah.
He was not having his best year, but he's still a very good player. He's their best defenseman when he's on their
he's their
on
his
game.
Number one defenseman.
Number one guy, plays a ton of minutes. I mean, I don't have to tell you guys or anyone what his capabilities are or how important he is, but it's a big hit. It's a big hit to the lineup, among other guys who are out. Muzzin's out, McKayo's out. And Sheldon Keefe was asked about how they overcome this and what kind of message would he send to his team in regards to the news that came out yesterday. And here's what Sheldon Keefe had to say.
The elite teams in the league don't get fazed by these types of situations. And we want to be an elite team. We believe we are an elite team and have the ability to take big steps as a group. And it's a really good opportunity for us individually and collectively to do just that.
I like that.
I like that message. But I also like that it's basically putting a proposition on the table for the players.
Yeah.
Go out and prove that you're elite. Because this year they have not proven they're an elite team. Like, collectively, over the 50 games that they played, 45 games.
There's been stretches. There have been stretches. Like, yeah, they look really good.
They have elite talent. On paper, they look like an elite team, but they have not consistently played like an elite team. And he's not wrong. Pittsburgh just missed their best player in the world for 28 games.
And weren't they like 18?
6-4.
Okay, right.
You know, there's been a lot of teams in the league that have missed some big, big pieces to their puzzle.
Even Winnipeg's a team that, you know, Brian Little, whether you like him or not, or where he fits in that lineup, like, he hasn't been available for
them.
Well,
and then add on Byfuglien. Like, you find out right before the season, you don't have your number one defenseman.
You know, again, however it's happened, because that's a different way that Byfuglien just said, check, please, when he got to camp. But, like, there's been adversity throughout the National Hockey League, a lot of teams. Mm-hmm. Like, Boston's had players that have been nicked up. You're right. You go right through. Because it's here in Toronto, and we cover the team, you know, it's front and center, it's focused. Montreal, prime example too. Now, different teams, different makeup of teams, but I'm just saying the built-in excuses can be there. You can't use them, and that's what I liked what he said, because he's not giving his team up. Well, our number one defenseman's out. Like, now we're in trouble.
Well, and number two.
And number two, yeah. On paper, I have Barry as number two technically. He should be. Barry should be your number two defenseman if he plays to his potential.
Right. This is a big opportunity for him. I said that yesterday. He can save his free agency with a big run here, because I think he's done himself a lot of damage. I think he's cost himself money this year based on the way he's performed. But here's a massive opportunity. It doesn't matter what you do, any given shift, you're going back out there the next one.
But do you think his minutes? I'm not sure his minutes are really going to change that much.
I think they better.
But he's playing like 22 a night now.
I think they'll
How much more is he going to play?
Who else are you going to play?
Playing with Marincin.
Who else are you going to play?
Dermott and Hall. I don't know. I think it's going to be like an even sandwich.
It'll be collective, but I think you're going to find Dermott. Like, he's circle Dermott and say, I need to find 2.5 more minutes for Dermott.
Yeah, I think that is
doable. Well, if you can. You know, three. Like, if Dermott is, I don't have
like the last couple games, he's played around 18, 19, but before that, it's like 15, 16.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Let's just say Dermott is an average of 16.5. He's got to be at 20.
Yeah.
That's where he has to be. That's where they think he's going to be anyways. That's where I think their projection is that he's going to play in your top four and be an 18 to 22 minute player per night when he's got, you know, 300 games in the league, kind of the Randy.
Yeah, he's only halfway there.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, you know, I didn't disagree when Randy said, a player, you can judge a defenseman around 300 games, what they are. Mm-hmm. I don't disagree with that sentiment. I think Dermott still has more consistency in his game, and I'm interested to see what he will be like when he arrives as a player. And every, like, because he is a player. Like, I'm,
yeah,
you
he's
know what
an everyday NHLer, but now right. can you prove
right.
that you're capable of more? And
well, he's going to push somebody out. Like, there's unrestricted free agency coming up. They believe that that can be taken care of in-house.
Yeah.
So whether it's Jake Muzzin or Barry or, you know, CeCe, whoever's minutes, well, we've got that guy. That's
yeah, Dermott's
guy.
A big part of it. That's, Sandin is right. the bigger part of it in terms of next season. I mean,
right.
Sandin is going to step in, and he starts tonight, even though he made his debut earlier in the year. This feels like a debut tonight. Like, it feels like almost an NHL debut. Like, you got a taste, but then you went back down, World Juniors. He's been all over the place, NHL, American Hockey League, junior hockey. Now you're up here, and you're not expected just to get your feet wet. You're going to have to go out and play, yeah. and you're going to have to perform for them because of what Sheldon Keefe just had to say. Elite teams don't get thrown off by a major injury, and what he really means by that is the next guy steps in and is capable of filling a hole.
Right.
Not completely, but also, let's not lose sight of this. I mean, the whole conversation all of last season was, what are they going to do about the contracts? What are they going to do about the money? Well, they made the decision to spend the money. Half their cap is on four players. Last time I checked, they're all playing tonight.
Yeah.
That's your team. Yes, it, of course, there's 18 guys out there, and Freddie Anderson is the fifth guy in that rotation.
Correct.
He's playing tonight.
Yeah.
You still got Freddie, Tavares, Matthews, Marner, Nylander. This organization moved all their chips in, or half of their chips in, and said, you are the four guys who are going to lead us to the promised land. They're still playing tonight.
Yep.
So let's go. You got one of the worst teams in the league. It's not even about tonight. I mean, Morgan Riley's not returning on Thursday. He's out for 2 months.
Right.
So it's not about one game at a time. It's going to be probably 20, 25 games.
Correct.
If not more than that. But the big four are playing. Half your cap is still in the lineup tonight.
Correct.
Let's see what you got. That's what they went half their chips into the middle on.
But it does put guys in a lot of difficult positions. Like, so you're Sheldon Keefe. The game is on the line. Who are you putting on the ice on D? It's probably like it's probably two of Dermott, Hall, Barry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
that's putting guys in spots,
but this is
aside
where,
from Barry, that they generally haven't been in.
Correct.
Hayes is absolutely right. You get paid big money, you have to perform.
Yeah.
But it's just gonna be interesting to see how you balance all that inexperience and
yeah. The one thing I would say to that is, if you're up and you're defending a lead with a minute left, you've got a good pulse of who's been going that night.
Yeah.
So that's the one thing I've been impressed with Sheldon. He hasn't been shy to play guys who he has trust in that night. So if he looks and says, Marinson's been really solid for me back there, you know what? I need 90 seconds out of him at a critical time. Marinson's going to be the guy.
I think you're going to see that.
And that's, to me, coaching in-game adjustments. And that's you don't just go, those two are out no matter what defending the lead. If another guy's having a game, he's the guy out there. That would be my guess.
And well, that's what I would expect.
And Sandin's the other one. Like, you talked about him. I think you want to get to a situation where you have to play him more. Like, you're not just, it's like you said, Hayes, before it was like 12 minutes a game. You don't totally need him at that point. Now they need him. Like,
right.
I think you're hoping he can eventually get to 17, 18, and
yeah, eight. And deserve 17
and deserve
or 18.
It, exactly.
Not
correct.
Just, hey,
correct.
By default, you have to go on the ice because
right.
somebody has to.
Agreed.
Ray Ferraro will join us just after 5 o'clock. You can hear the game right here on TSN 1050 tonight. New Jersey in town. Jack Hughes, the first overall pick. No buzz. Probably the last time there was a first overall pick in town with this little buzz was Nico Hischier, who's also in the lineup tonight. But he played here for a long time, MTHL or GTHL, and you hear nothing about
feathers.
This kid being here tonight. So we'll get to that story a little bit later in the hour. Touch on the national championship game last night. Joe Burrow, how good could he be in the NFL? And we'll start looking ahead to Packers, Niners, and the Chiefs, Titans. We'll do that next. All right, we have a pair of Maple Leaf tickets to give away. Leafs taking on Ottawa Saturday, February 1st. And every day this week, we will provide the clue to the identity of a current or ex-Maple Leaf player, and on Friday, you have a chance to call in and name that Leaf. Today's clue, this former Maple Leaf eclipsed the 50-point plateau just twice during his career. That would make you believe it's a defenseman.
Yeah. Unless it's
could
like
be a fourth line guy just kind of plugging along.
Unless it's like a Daniel Winnick or something.
And 50 points is a lot of points. I mean, there's not, I would say in the history of the game,
less than
80% of the players that have ever played have never hit 50 points.
In a season?
Yeah. At any season, at any point in any season throughout their career.
Mm-hmm. Be a good, you're right.
Bet you 80% of the league.
But,
too high. Sounds like a good story for The Athletic.
It is a good story because
I don't think
if
so.
You
it's
go back to the 80s, grinders that were on the fourth line were 20 goal scorers because the games were a lot looser.
Yeah, the 80s throw everything out of whack. The 80s really do mess with an experiment
well,
like this.
Like I played with Craig McTavish. The guy didn't wear a bucket. Like he would drive me to the rink like he had no bucket.
Right. Did he own a helmet?
I don't
like,
know.
I know he didn't wear it in a game.
At the end of his career.
But wouldn't you think, like, at some point, maybe in practice or, like, did he own a helmet?
I don't know.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah. I'll just put one on for today.
But yeah, I technically have one.
Somewhere.
Like, I have a helmet.
Yeah.
I don't know if
we
he
gotta
did.
We got to get into that.
Yeah. Ray Ferraro, who played in the 80s, he'll join us in about 45 minutes. So the national title game last night, LSU winning big, Joe Burrow going off. It's a lock. He's going first overall to Cincinnati. But Trevor Lawrence has got to go back to school. And I got to believe there's some teams that are thinking we should tank for him. He didn't have a great night last night, but he is a stud. And to chat about that in the NFL, we're joined now by former NFLer, current NFL analyst on Fox Sports, and the host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Back on Overdrive, here's Mark Schlereth. What's up, Mark?
How are you guys? You guys talking to Chicken Parm in 45 minutes? Get Chicken Parm my best. I ain't seen him in years.
Is that your guy, Chicken Parm Ray Ferraro? You got to really know him to know that nickname.
Yeah, well, we worked at ESPN together for way back in the day.
Right.
So, he's great man. Great man. Great hockey player. Great analyst. Please give him my best.
Yes, we will for sure. And he used to yap the whole game. Like, Ray would not shut up on the ice. Were you that type of player on the field? Did you talk a lot of smack, or were you usually just silent assassin and let's get after it?
No, I didn't say anything. I mean, I think you got to understand, like, in football, the guys who talk are the guys who don't have to hit each other every play. You know, it's the wide receivers, it's the DBs. They just can't shut up. They're talking. But, you know, maybe five or six times a game they actually have to hit somebody. You know, when you play in line of scrimmage, you got to hit somebody on every single freaking play. So I don't want to piss anybody off. I don't want to give anybody extra motivation to whip my ass. So, yeah, no, I didn't say boo, ever.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. You're right. A lineman, you're colliding the whole night.
Exactly.
After every play, you start talking smack. Like, eventually, you're just going to get your head blown up. I mean, it's going to happen. Someone's going to lay you out.
I played with Shannon Sharp forever, and Shannon would be the first guy to tell you that I had many conversations. Shannon had this ability as a tight end to pick a fight with the guy that you had to play against. And he'd get that guy all riled up and all pissed off, and then you got to put out the fire. And I'll never forget, I'm playing against Chester McLaughlin. And Chester, you know, I mean, Chester's 6'5", 340, and, you know, and I'm, you know, 290, 285, you know, and I'm just like, it's a fight all the time, right? And I'm like, Chester, listen, man, here's the deal. Your beef is not with me. It's with 84. And if you want to thunder punch him on top of the head, be my guest. I will not come to his defense. Go over there and punch him right in the face. I don't care. But, like, hey, you and I, we're just going to town, right? We're just working hard over here. We don't have to fight about anything. You don't have to be – you're not mad at me. You're mad at 84, you know? So go after that dude.
Yeah, that's probably a smart play.
I love thunder punch.
Just go
that
pop
him.
That is
the greatest comment.
Yeah, I don't think that would get Shannon Sharp to stop yapping, even if you pulled that off.
No.
But with Mark Schlereth, longtime NFLer. Joe Burrow, he's going first overall to Cincinnati. They're going to be ecstatic up there. Lots of hype because of the stats and the numbers. I think he's worthy of the hype based on what I've seen. Are you buying into the hype of Joe Burrow?
Well, here's the problem. You know, hey, remember when Baker Mayfield came out a couple years ago and he's the most accurate quarterback in the history of college football? He's played 30 games. He's throwing 35 picks. Here's the thing. The difference between college football and Joe Burrow, and Joe Burrow had the greatest season in the history of college football. Remember, he had a transfer from Ohio State because he wasn't going to play there. And like, and he was a 50-some-odd percent completion percentage guy until this season. So there's always, for me, that's a little bit leery. You know, you're always kind of concerned about that. But here's the thing about college football. Like, you can out-athlete your opponent in college football on a consistent basis. You get to the NFL, and everybody has like athletes. Everybody is really good. You don't have the blind sisters of the poor. If you line up 11 times, you know, 9 times, you're not just way better athletically than the people you're lined up against. So when you get to the next level, it becomes exceptionally hard. And then you look at the culture of an organization like the Cincinnati Bengals. Like, that culture, you can say what you want. I think maybe what Marvin Lewis did over the years in Cincinnati was absolutely incredible because, culturally speaking, I mean, they don't have a winning type of culture. You know, from an ownership standpoint, the owner won't pay a general manager. He pays himself as the general manager because he doesn't want to spend the money. So I'm concerned about a kid going to an organization like that that really isn't truly concerned about winning championships. They're concerned about building their, you know, their equity as a football club. If a great season comes along the way, you know, the outlier, we'll accept it. That's awesome. But that's not really what we're in the business of doing. We're in the business of increasing our franchise's value, not of spending money and winning championships. And so it makes it really hard to go into an organization like that and actually win.
Well, and then, Mark, what do you think is the right way to handle a young quarterback? Like, do you think he should come in and play right away? Or you look at some of the guys that are left over right now, they didn't play right away. Like, do you think there's a proper way to handle, especially like a number one pick like that?
I think everybody's different. You know, I'd be really interested to see if Joe Burrow, and I don't think you would ever do this, and I don't think very many guys would, but would you ever just say, I won't play for Cincinnati and hold out and see if you can get yourself traded like Eli Manning did or like John Elway did to a better situation? I don't think you'll do that to kids from Ohio. In regards to what's the best way to do it, well, I don't know that there's a best way to do it. We saw in Kansas City, we saw what happened with Patrick Mahomes where he didn't play his first year. Then he started the last game before a playoff game because they had everything cinched up and Alex Smith was the quarterback. And then he came in and won threw 50 touchdowns and won an MVP. I think it's always better to sit back and kind of absorb. But I think the situation in Kansas City was unique because Alex Smith is one of the smartest guys in football. Alex Smith knew that he was going to be replaced, and Alex Smith did an unbelievable job of mentoring a young guy. And so do you have a guy there that's going to help mentor a young quarterback? Do you have a guy there that sees it through the eyes of a quarterback, sees it not through the eyes of a coach, but the eyes of a player that can really help that guy develop? Like, I don't know what the situation will be in Cincinnati. I don't imagine that that's going to be the situation. And then, like, honestly, some guys thrive. Some guys, you put them in and they play really well. Some guys, you know, that's where they grow. And then some guys, the enormity of the situation beats them down. So every guy is different. Every guy has a kind of a different threshold. And look at Troy Aikman. Troy Aikman got the snot beat out of him his rookie year, and he didn't win anything. And he goes on to be a Hall of Famer. And then you look at a guy like David Carr, who got the snot beat out of him in Houston, and he never is able to get over the top. So every guy is different. I don't know. It just depends on who Joe Burrow is, and I have no idea.
With Mark Schlereth, longtime NFLer and host of the Stinking Truth podcast, if I were to propose to you, you're building a team, and you're a GM, you can either have Patrick Mahomes or anybody else in the league. Who are you taking?
Patrick Mahomes. I mean, he's a unicorn. Andy Reid and the Kansas City Chiefs have done a great job of supporting him and building around him. But he does some things from that position that are absolutely incredible. Now, to be great at that position, you know, you got to have the horses, you got to have the players around you to be great. But he certainly has that. He certainly helps elevate them as an organization. Obviously, the quarterback position is an incredibly important position in our game. But, you know, you look at Kansas City, and one of the things that Kansas City does on a consistent basis that nobody else can do is Kansas City can drop back 35, 40 times a game, and they can say, hey, we're going to get out of that 35, 40 times, we're going to have five guys out in the route on 80% of them. And we're good enough up front with our two tackles and our offensive line to hold up in that situation. And when we do break down, our quarterback is so athletically gifted, he can move around, buy himself some time, and then throw from any platform and throw it to any place on the field as we create our second route, as we break our first route and say, okay, now we're in scramble drill. What do? Like, it's a very unique situation. And so, you know, I mean, I don't – like, he's – to me, from a quarterback standpoint, yes. And the best player in football, to me, is Aaron Donald. He's the biggest freak show in the world, but he doesn't touch the ball every time. You know, he doesn't touch the ball every play that he's on the field. So, yeah, I would take Patrick Mahomes.
In terms of the NFC game, earlier in the season, the Packers went into San Francisco, and they got blown up. It was a Monday nighter. It was embarrassing. They lost three games all year. And one of them was in that game. And now they got to roll back into Levi's Stadium and take on a team that has been dominant all year, that laid a beating on Minnesota last week. I'm sure you've been in that position before, Mark. The cliches will be thrown around in Green Bay that was earlier in the season. They're a different team now. They're not concerned about it. I don't see how that's possible. Like, how do you react if you're a player on Green Bay walking back into that building knowing this is the biggest game of the year, but the last time you were there, you got smoked? How do you overcome that?
Well, I think there's a lot of things. I mean, you can look at, first off, you have to look at the film. Why did we get smoked? What happened? What did we not do from an execution standpoint? What did we not do from a play calling standpoint? And how do we, you know, how do we, one, attack their weaknesses, but two, make sure that we keep ourselves out of our weaknesses? You know, play to our strengths, attack their weaknesses. So you can learn a lot from yourself on the film and say, well, hey, listen, if I got whipped because of this particular technique, well, I'm going to change my technique. So, I think that you can play that from a position of strength. You know, you can play that from a, hey, man, if we just don't do this, and I'll give you a for instance. In 1996, I'm playing for the Denver Broncos, and we have a game in Green Bay late in the year. And we got a bunch of injuries. We got some guys out. You know, we've got a lot of different things that went down. We went out there and got our ass whipped at Lambeau. I mean, it was like 46-7. It was a butt whipping, right? Well, we turn around and we play them in the Super Bowl the following year. And their players and the media and everybody's talking about, wow, you know, when they played in December of the year previous year, they were a 13-3 number one seed, and Green Bay physically whipped them, and their old line, they're not going to be able to run against us, and their O-line can't do this, and they can't do this against the, and we're sitting there going, well, you only got a small percentage of who we actually are. And you guys are sorely mistaken if you don't think we can run the ball on you guys. And ultimately what ended up happening, we win the Super Bowl 31-24, and they clearly were not ready for what we really were, because they had a perception of what we were in December of 96. Not what we were in January of, you know, 97/98, because it was the Super Bowl. So, like, that can be beneficial to you as a football team. And you can get a little bit of overconfidence. One of the things they did, and we knew they were in trouble, we're in San Diego, it's late, so, you know, all the defensive linemen and offensive linemen are out of shape at that point, right? We're all fat. And it's January, so it's late in the season, so you got your winter layer on. We're both winter teams. You know, we were in Denver. They're from Green Bay. We go to San Diego, where it's warm, it's California, it's beautiful, blah, blah, blah. And they chose not to dress a defensive lineman. They laid one of their defensive linemen inactive. And I kid you not, we're in the locker room before the Super Bowl going, that's a sign of disrespect. They don't respect us. They think that they can just whip us without having the proper rotation and heat. We're going to whip that ass today. And Terrell Davis won the MVP, he played three quarters because he left with a migraine and still had over 150 yards rushing.
Not bad.
That's amazing.
Mike Holmgren should have known better. Greasy maneuver by Mike.
I'll get you out of here, but I had a question. Where do you think Tom Brady, I mean, I'm sure you've been asked a million times, but what's your instinct on the Tom Brady saga?
Well, I mean, I think he's going to play. He's stated as much on social media, so on his Instagram page. So he's going to play. I think with Josh McDaniels staying in New England, I think Tom Brady will stay in New England. I don't know that they have a clear plan to replace him. So I think he'll be in New England. If he was going to leave that organization and go somewhere else, my gut tells me the LA Chargers would be where he ends up. But I think first and foremost, I think he stays with New England. If he has to leave, then my next guess would be the Chargers. But that would be, pure speculation on my part.
The podcast is the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. You can also find him on Fox. Former NFLer Mark Schlereth. Always appreciate you finding time for us. Thank you, Mark.
You got it. Be good.
There he is, Mark Schlereth. Boys with Ray Ferraro.
Chicken parm?
The ESPN guys, like John Buchagras, calls him chicken parm. And so he must have, that's just, must have been his routine.
We've never really gotten the, have you ever gotten the chicken parm story? Like, I don't know why he's called chicken parm.
I don't know either. My guess would be, again, at ESPN, I'll bet you they had a cafeteria and he probably just destroyed chicken parm.
Every day.
Yeah, although I don't know how much he would have been on campus. He used to call games, I think, for ESPN, didn't he?
And I thought he was in studio, too. Like, okay. I want to say he was a studio analyst early on. We've never gotten to the bottom of it, and he never speaks of it.
No, it never really comes up.
Like, it's one of those things where I think it's you have to be in an inner circle to know the true story.
Well, because his old Hartford teammates used to call him something, too.
Yeah, Siegel or
no,
something.
No, they call him Pee-wee.
Oh, that's right. Q was on the show and called him Pee-wee.
That's right. Remember, we had Quinville on a few years ago, and we were talking about Ray, and he's like, wow, Pee-wee. And I'm like, Pee-wee? What's up with that? I haven't heard that one yet.
So not like, always, Pee-wee.
There he is. Nice drop. How'd you have Quinville ready?
How do you have Quinville?
Play that again.
Not always, Pee-wee.
I could listen to Quinville read the phone.
We got
to
get him.
Gotta get him back on. Got it.
Best.
All right, Ray's coming up in about 25 minutes. Overdrive continues on the TSN app.
Pat here, and you can ask Pee-wee about this.
All right, so the O-Dog is not here today. He's not here to defend himself, but I've noticed the general public, a lot of people pointing out the hypocrisy from him yesterday.
Oh, yeah?
Well, remember, he had no issue with the Houston Astros cheating in the fashion that they did. And he just said, hey, if you're going to throw up the signs and we find a way to get them and we use them to our advantage, so be it. That's fine. He's not alone in that take.
Right.
But a lot of people have been pointing out, remember Patrick Reed, our boy Patrick Reed, who was cheating?
Very upset about that.
He was furious about Patrick Reed cheating.
The backswing, wasn't
right.
it?
Right. And he was kind of setting himself up with a better lie in the waist bunker. And I wish he was here. We'll bring it up tomorrow. I'm sure he'll be back in here tomorrow. Because the people want to hear from the O-Dog on the inconsistencies when it comes to cheating. Now, maybe it's a team sport versus individual. I don't know. Maybe
because he's into golf. No, I think that was just his take at that moment. And he might even change his take tomorrow.
I just think he doesn't like Patrick Reed, too. He's got a real problem with Patrick Reed. And he is a bandwagon kind of guy, so he probably loved the Houston Astros.
I always think golf is some of the rules in golf are ridiculous. They're flat out ridiculous.
It is.
And you know there's always somebody, well, you moved that grain or that blade of hair or blade of grass out of the way.
I can't tell you how uncomfortable it is to play golf with people that you don't know
and are by the book, they're heroes.
Because of that. Like little stuff. Like it's not even that they're going to call you on, a divot or moving the ball or something like that. They may not care that much, but it's etiquette that some people will care about. Like if I play with my dad or my buddies or whatever.
Right.
And I'm not away, but I'm up and I'm ready. I'm going to putt.
Right.
And if you're not technically up, but I'm not ready, putt.
Yeah. Go.
Some people will make it so awkward and like.
Like sorry, they'll do,
they're like, I think I'm away. And they're like, oh, sorry, dude. You got me beat by like 6 inches, but technically you're away. So I'll let you read the putt from 15 different angles and waste our time.
Yeah.
Go ahead. But you get into these kind of confrontations where people on the course are like, well, the real sticklers for etiquette. You're not supposed to do that. And hey, you walked in my line. Like, dude, you got an 80-foot putt.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter that I walked in your line.
And you're not on the tour.
And you're not on tour.
You're at a goat track.
Right. You know what a big thing is, too? Is if you don't pull your weight on putting the flag back in. So if you're a guy who you just putt out and you start moving, guys really get hot and bothered by, like, what do you think, I'm your caddy? Like,
yeah.
You know, I'll get the flag every once in a while, but move your ass and go pick up a flag every once in a while.
Well, yeah, how many sports are there where you're kind of policing yourself? And it's competitive. Like, there's no other sport that really exists that way, is there?
Well, I mean, if you're playing tennis against somebody at a court, like,
either it's in or it's out.
I know, but if it's borderline,
you take it.
I used to have some pretty good arguments with people that I like. That was clearly in.
Tennis is one for sure.
And see, for me, like, my whole job was angles, so I understand physics. I know exactly, like, that ball at that angle that went in.
So you go John McEnroe kind of?
Nope. Never, but I would be like, it's in.
But you're trusting the other person you're playing with, to be honest.
Right.
Because if you miss the line by that much, and you're on the other side of the court, you can't tell.
Yeah.
Like, you have, it's totally.
Like, really? Show me where it hit. Like,
but it's not possible to ever find out.
So what do you think is appropriate in golf? Like, how much can you cheat? Like, taking strokes, okay.
Like, moving your ball. Like, I don't know. What is it, club length?
What if, like, there's a leaf on your ball in front of the ball?
Well, that obviously you should move.
You've probably had some gray area moments.
Admit to my gray area. I'm not on tour. I don't care, and I'm out here to have a good time. It's like playing men's league hockey.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not fighting for pucks. Yeah. I'm not keeping stats. I'm out here to get a sweat on, have a beer, and go home. Like, yeah. I don't care enough.
Yeah.
Yes, if there's something on my ball, if I'm... You know, what? I don't care. And I don't care if you do it. That's the thing. It's not like I'm being a hypocrite where I'm doing it and then I'm calling you on it. I could care less what you do.
If it was for money.
For money's different. For money, totally. Money, you have to be honorable. And even that, what you rely on is the other person you're playing with saying, oh, move that.
Right.
You know, like, because what you can put yourself in a position where you're trying to get out of danger. And you might maybe injure yourself or, like, break a club on a tree because you're up against the bark. And it's like, what are you doing? Like, just move it. And but it's on the other person to say, go ahead. Because if they don't, you kind of got to play it where it lies.
Right.
You know, it's a Happy Gilmore scenario.
Should I play this here?
I don't know.
I don't think you're a golfer, are you, Jonas?
Actually, I'm really good, not overall, but I can drive. I don't know why. You wouldn't think someone like me could drive
I
can drive, but everything else just gets away.
I know people that are, like, smaller in stature that just bomb the ball.
I don't know how far I can, but I can hit.
Ray Whitney. Remember Ray Whitney, the hockey player?
Yeah, not a big guy.
Scratch golfer.
Now, these guys are on tour, but Rory McIlroy is about this tall.
I didn't know that.
He can bomb the ball.
A lot of it's technique, too.
Oh, it's all, you know, like, club speed and torque, and you're leaning into it. And yeah, there's a science to it. I'm 6'2", 200. I do not bomb the ball.
Yeah, but when you were Griff, like,
it didn't matter. No, because
you got up there and you were Griff and you couldn't bomb the ball.
It didn't matter, man. I don't have the club speed. Like, that's probably the biggest difference between, like, a really good player and a guy who's just, like, an average player.
Yeah.
Like, their club, like, the way they're, like, O is a great player, and O swings, man.
Like, he comes out of his shoes type of thing. Like, he can
with every club, like, he trusts his hand-eye, his dexterity. He trusts what he's capable of doing.
Right.
And he swings with abandon.
Yeah.
And that's, like, you look at Tiger Woods. Like, Tiger, it's a violent swing.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of these guys, they're, like, violently swinging.
Shoes and stuff.
Yeah.
Like.
Anyway. All right. Ray Ferraro's coming up. He'll join us at 5:05.
Chicken parm.
Are we going to get
chicken
into
parm?
That?
Pee-wee.
I think we ask him
chicken parm. Pee-wee might. I feel like he would be. He wouldn't be happy about that.
Chicken parm is a nerve.
You think so?
I don't know. For some reason, maybe I'm wrong.
Because he's Italian, and it's like a stereotyping thing.
I don't know. I've never heard the story, and I feel like it was asked with him around one time. He's like, ah, like, he kind of blew it off. Like,
uh-oh.
I don't know. Maybe Jonas, you're a reporter.
Yeah, I'll ask.
You can see I'm writing an article on different nicknames in the National Hockey League and people that have been affiliated. Tell us the story of Chicken Parm. Maybe you could do something like that. Have you ever thought of doing
Or we can dance around it and kind of like, I'll get it. Okay. Don't worry.
All right. Well, we'll see if maybe the grappler can tip him off.
Yeah.
We'll put the grappler in the firing line.
Yeah, give him a heads up.
Give him a bit of heads up, and we'll try to get to the bottom of it if we can. The Leafs are in action tonight. Sidney Crosby returning tonight. Zach Kassian speaking with the media after his suspension. We'll get into that and more coming up. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4.